This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Way on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight you have Damien.
Hello.
Sarah.
Hello.
And myself, Dean. The Melbourne Queer Film Festival, the largest queer film festival in the Southern Hemisphere, is in full swing. There are many stories about people who try to hide their sexuality in their life. There are also some stories of people who try to deny their culture.
But what happens when these two things collide?
How does culture influence coming out if you are from a country where being gay is seen as shameful?
And how is queer filmmaking helping to bridge the divide of acceptance for both sexuality and culture in Chinese communities? To tell us about his latest story, showing this week at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, he spoke with Ray Yung, director of the film Front Cover. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
And I met a producer from China, and then the first thing she said is like, oh, I really like your story, and the character is abnormal, isn't it? So I was thinking, okay, interesting. Are we going to be able to work together now? Because like she actually said it. But as we talked, then I realized that what she meant, she wasn't saying something that was nasty. It was just something that was inherent in the way that they think in China.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
We start off tonight visiting Tunisia with a story where students convicted of gay sex speak out about forced anal exams and other horrific abuse in prison.
Yes, this is a real shocker, this one. So trigger warnings all round for this one. We thought we'd get the really grim stuff out of the way to begin with. Now, in a recent interview with the Human Rights Watch, four of the six Tunisian students who were in prison last December for sodomy spoke out about their nightmarish experience, which involved forced anal examinations, beatings, and humiliation. The six students were first arrested in December last year after their home was raided by police based on the intel that a number of homosexuals are using a house in Kairan to do sodomy. During their interrogation at the local police station, the students were bullied continuously, insulted with demeaning Arabic words for homosexual, and all were slapped, kicked, and beaten. One student also shared that one of the policemen ordered him to take down his boxers to see if his pubic hair was shaved. So it just gets worse from there. Mm. The students were then brought to the hospital the next day and were forced to undergo anal examinations. And one was beaten when he was refused until he signed his agreement to the test.
Yeah, and then that scared all the others to do the tests as well. And the doctors, who generally have a duty of care to their patients, performed these tests and wrote that the students had engaged in anal sex.
Yes, and as you can imagine, the tests are not considered to be, scientifically accurate, shall we say. So the interviewees were then sentenced to 3 years in prison, all six of them, and three subsequent years of banishment from the city of Kairouan. Now, they said that the moment they entered the prison, the guards started abusing them. They would call them out, take them into an open area, and ask them to dance or walk like women, and if they didn't do it, they would be slapped. Moving on, the appeals court reduced their prison time to 1 month after an international outcry.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes, yeah. You would think so, which the students had already served, and they dropped the banishment punishment, although obviously they're saying that they've been scarred for life.
Now, it's interesting, though, that, you know, all that treatment is way harsh. Like, it's really off the scale. For them to then drop it so quickly, I mean, what's going on? They're not obviously convicted in...
Yeah, I guess maybe Tunisia, since the Arab Spring, perhaps they're trying to bring some of their laws more in line. You know, they're more susceptible to international condemnation. Because Human Rights Watch have had to remind them that this is...
It slipped their mind.
That forced anal examinations violate medical ethics, and the Tunisian Justice Ministry should ban those anal examinations. And they also urge the parliament to eliminate its law, which criminalises consensual same-sex conduct. Hear, hear.
One interesting thing was one of the students said that my family knew from before that I was gay and they supported me. They came to visit me every week in prison. So, you know, it's not as entrenched, or, you know, there's scope there for it to improve.
Yeah, however, that same guy, when his extended family found out, they forced the father to kick him out of his home. So there's still cultural issues, which...
There's still issues.
In the wider community.
Over to China, where LGBT people have developed networks in order to marry a partner of the opposite gender to please parents that are hungry for grandchildren.
Now, this is a story as old as time, isn't it?
So, yeah, it is, but technology has jumped on board and made it all that much easier.
Absolutely.
So this is a world of what's known as the fake marriage market in China, where basically... gay people look for lesbian people and marry, and then they basically, you know, have the public side of their lives covered. Everyone's like, yep, married couple, and then basically each half of the marriage goes off and does their thing.
So there's a another documentary called Inside the Chinese Closet, and Sophia Lavara came about the subject for her documentary by chance when a friend took her to a gay club in Shanghai, and she was surprised because there actually are gay clubs in China. Now, obviously, one of the problems is that in order to please their parents, but also to have some semblance of independence in their own lives, many gay men and lesbians in China go to fake marriage markets, which are also online. And it's kind of, it's no different really from straight speed dating. Everyone wears a number and asks what they're looking for, but it gets a bit tricky when it comes to the subject of children.
Yeah, that kind of leaves a little bit of a hole there. You can only carry the front so far, but I guess it falls apart once you get to the element of children.
I suppose it's because of the one child policy has caused some problems.
Yeah, precisely. That need to carry on the family name.
And in Cuba, where the gay scene and HIV education are impressing Americans, the president of the Black AIDS Institute says the US can take many lessons from how Cuba treats its LGBT and HIV positive citizens. Who knew?
Yeah, so Wilson took a delegation of gay men, many of colour, to Cuba for 2 weeks starting on Christmas Eve. And they were really impressed with how this small island nation had responded to the disease. And they saw it as a disease from the beginning, and so they treated it as such. And so they've actually achieved much more than the US with limited funds to prevent the spread.
There you go. It's not always just about money. And in brief, a campaign to have same-sex couples' adoption rights put to a popular vote in Colombia has managed to gather more than 1.8 million signatures needed to move forward with a referendum on the issue.
In the Dominican Republic, openly gay candidates are running for Congress and city council positions for the first time.
A number of young religious people in Malawi have threatened to sue the government if they don't arrest 4,000 homosexualities they say are living in one of the country's northern cities.
And same-sex couples can now officially marry in Greenland as the Marriage Act comes into effect after being unanimously voted in favour of last year. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Mahida from Nigeria, and you are on Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
And the country we've decided to pay a visit to today is China. China has an estimated population of 40 million LGBT people.
So that's a lot.
That's two times everyone in Australia, roughly. Bit of background on where they're at and where they came from. Homosexuality was decriminalised only in 1997 and wasn't removed from the official list of mental disorders until 2001. So in the international spectrum, that's quite recent.
And there are still no protections. That's a big NO for LGBT individuals, even in the face of continual harassment and discrimination.
So whilst this sounds like it's par for the course for LGBTI rights in any number of countries across the world, it gets interesting when you start looking at the barriers to progress. No surprise, in China it's cultural.
Oh, what a shock. So what are the cultural barriers?
Family pressure is a big one. It's a massive one. In fact, 74% of Chinese LGBT people use the argument of family pressure as a reason as to why they do not come out. But having said that, the situation is improving as the younger generation is abandoning certain traditional values, and the proliferation of social media is helping break away from those traditional values which have been peddled by the state-owned media for so long.
But given that China's not really a religious country because of the, you know, the prevalence of communism, what exactly is the traditional pressure that's preventing people from coming out?
Family in China is king, basically. So it's not religious at all, but it's the concept of family, it's the concept of community. You know, they've got the reputation is on the line. It's all about, you know, your family lineage, where you've come from. It's all about procreating and extending the next generation and carrying the family forward. So evidently, LGBTI people can't contribute to, I guess, what society demands of that family culture.
I think it's also the collectivism. So when you do something, it's not just affecting you. Like here in Australia, I think, or as far as I can see, it tends to be, you know, you do something for yourself, whereas there, anything you do goes back to your family. So if you do something that seems wrong, that's terrible for your whole family. So there's a lot of pressure to kind of toe the line.
You don't have the privilege or the ability just to take something and run with it because that's what works for you. You've kind of got to be thinking about the bigger picture and the family and community and how that impacts them.
Which is probably why 80% of China's approximately 40 million gays get married. So it's very common. Women known as homo wives wonder why they can't arouse their husbands, making them feel that there's something wrong with them because they don't know that their husbands are gay when they marry them. Unfortunately, that is pretty much all about providing those much-loved grandchildren for their parents and carrying on the family name.
But as we mentioned before, thousands of Chinese gays have come up with a creative solution for this, where they gay men marry lesbian women so that they've got the face, everyone looks happy on the outside, but both partners can go off and live separate lives.
Another key difference, I think, you know, which is evident just from the surface, is public display of affection. So US or even any Western culture versus China in particular, it's flipped to what we're used to. So demonstration of affection between same-sex people is just, you know, it's normal. It's not particularly sexualized. It's a platonic thing, whereas, you know, in countries like the US, Australia, if you see any display of affection between men, people, or between two women, people automatically assume that it's a sexualized thing.
Hi, this is Tamás from Hardcore Society, fighting for the human rights of the LGBTQI community in Hungary on the World Wide Wave.
Tonight we have an interview with Ray Young, director of Front Cover. Growing up in Hong Kong and witnessing the transition from British colony to a part of China, it's easy to see how gay people feel like they don't fit in. Ray Young is a filmmaker with his latest offering showing this week at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. We asked Ray to give us a flavour of what his new film, Front Cover, is about.
My movie is called Front Cover, and it's basically about an American Asian guy who is brought up in Chinatown in America, and he kind of like feels that he has to suppress his heritage as a Chinese person in order to survive and fit into a white-dominated fashion industry. And so all his life has been trying to, you know, sort of like hide, you know, and pretend to be as Caucasian as possible. And then one day he meets this mainland Chinese actor who is very proud of his heritage, and he has to dress him for a magazine shoot. And at the beginning, then they have a lot of fights about, you know, their different opinions. But eventually, as they get to know each other, they kind of like, you know, get along and eventually fall in love.
The movie is called Front Cover, which is a bit of a play on words. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, basically, it has a various different meanings, like front cover meaning the front of a magazine. But I think it's also like both characters in the movie, they put up a front, like one who is Asian, but he wants to come across as white as possible, while the other one who is in the closet, so he tries to be as butch as possible, and yet, you know, really inside he's gay, yeah.
You've got those two characters, so one is proud of being out but denying his Chinese heritage, and the other proud of his Chinese heritage but denying his homosexuality. Is that something that you've noticed a lot in your life? Is this coming from yourself?
Well, I think for me personally, because like I was brought up in Hong Kong. So basically, Hong Kong was kind of a British colony when I was growing up. And we was, you know, it was a Chinese society, but at the same time, we were not really ruling ourselves. So there was always an element of like looking up for the British culture as more superior. So I think a lot of people sort of like, if you have a certain, you know, education level, you want to come across as British as possible. So I think that was something that is my personal experience, because like when I was growing up, that was part of the experience that I was going through. And then later on, I was sent to study in an English boarding school. And over there, it's like mainly there were only two Chinese kids in the school. And so, of course, you have to come across, if you, in order to fit in, you have to play cricket. You know, you can't speak with a very strong accent because people are going to laugh at you. So all that I sort of like learned to be as non-Chinese as possible. And of course, when I later on, when I
grew
up,
so not old, anti-Chinese, but not trying to be nondescript?
Or? Well, there were elements of anti-Chinese as well. You know, I mean, there were times because like later on in school, I think they were accepting more kids from Asia. And in order to sort of like divorce myself away from them, I sort of like tried to like, I wouldn't speak any Chinese. I wouldn't eat any Chinese food or anything like that, you know. So in a way, it's slightly anti-Chinese, I guess, you know. And also later on, you know, when I discovered I was gay, and then I sort of like go out to the gay scene. And in the gay scene, it's the same, you know, being Asian is also not being seen as the most attractive, you know, crowd, you know, and there is still that certain racism in the gay scene as well. So there are a lot of elements to make you feel that you're ashamed of your own heritage, and therefore you need to act differently in order, you know, to suppress that.
Bringing you more of your community. Joy 94.9.
This is Tiseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office on the World Wide Wave,
where we take you around the globe, one country at a time. And tonight we're stopping off in China. One of the central characters in the film Front Cover is Ning, a famous young actor from mainland China who is hiding his sexuality. He sees the out and proud Ryan as having no shame due to being openly gay. We asked Ray how prevalent he thinks this feeling of shame from being open about your sexuality is.
It's funny. That's a funny story because like I was doing an MFA at Columbia University, and then I was working on the short, and then I met a producer from China. And then the first thing she said is like, oh, I really like your story and the character is abnormal, isn't it? So I was thinking, okay, interesting. Are we going to be able to work together now? Because like she actually said it. But as we talked, then I realized that what she meant, she wasn't saying something that was nasty. It was just something that was inherent in the way that they think in China, you know, is being gay is abnormal, is something that you shouldn't be proud of, something that you need to hide, you know, because in many ways, you know, being gay is still very much a taboo subject in China.
Family is important, particularly to Chinese culture. How do families react when they have a son or a daughter that comes out as gay?
Well, it depending on, you know, I'm from Hong Kong. So in Hong Kong, people are a lot more acceptable in that way. I mean, like, there's a lesbian gay film festival in Hong Kong, and that's been running for 20 years. And also, it's not a criminal event in Hong Kong. In China, it's still very, very murky, you know, the situation. Although it's not illegal, but at the same time, if there are many ways where they can punish you if you are very out. So that is that question. And also because they used to have a one-child policy. And so in order to carry on the family name, it's very, very important. So that's all the elements of social pressure and the society not accepting you or embrace you that makes it really difficult for anybody to come out in that country, really.
As a filmmaker, one of the themes that you've looked at, or one of the issues you've looked at regularly, is around minorities. What makes that an important issue for you?
Well, it's important for me because, like, I was living in a Western society. So as a Chinese person, you're already in a minority. I was living in England before, and I think we were, like, less than 1% of the population. And then on top of that, I'm also gay. So you're really a minority within a minority. You're really if you turn to like the white society, then you are Chinese. You turn to the Chinese society, then you are gay. So you're not really accepted in both worlds. So, you know, so being a minority, so of course I would like to have a voice, you know. So I think that's why I start making movies.
And acceptance, too, is another key theme, particularly in this movie, both from the US character and the Chinese character, acceptance of each other and acceptance of themselves. Why did you want to bring that to light?
Well, I think because it's so important to be able to accept of who you are, because like so often that we, in order to fit in, we try to put up such a front and try to do things or pretend to be somebody else or something else that you are not. And really that is stemming from being very insecure about really who you are. So I think in order to cope with that, the first thing you need to do is really to face who you are and accept things that maybe other people are not going to embrace, and embrace it yourself. I think that is really the most important thing. And again, that has to do a lot with the identity issues, you know. Like I said, you know, because all my life, you know, even when I was growing up in Hong Kong, your identity is always very murky, because like we were not really Chinese in a way, because we were sort of like taught to be very anti-communists or anti-mainland China. And at the same time, we were never British, because we were always just a colony, you know, and the British were never going to accept us, you know, as in 1997, you know, they didn't really, you know, give us a passport or anything. So right from the beginning, you know, the day you were born, you were already in a place where you don't really have a national identity, you see. So that, I think that really sort of like shaped me. And as I said, you know, as I moved to England and live in the West, so all that just piled up.
Class is another theme that has come in, not just to this movie, but your previous one, The Cutsleeve Boys. What is your message about class around Asian cultures?
Well, you see, going back like in Hong Kong, when we didn't really have a national identity, what is important is like you have enough money in order for you to be able to go overseas or get away in case one day the communists arrive or something like that. So having money, it becomes a really important issue for us. So that's why Hong Kong, in between the 70s and the 90s, a lot of people work really hard and make a lot of money, because that is really your only identity. And that is very much like to do with like a class. It's like once you have money, then kind of like it brings you out from the low cost housing, and then brings you to the living in mid levels where all the British people live. And so it kind of like elevates you to a different class, you see. And so it is very important. And again, in order to rise above the class, like in Hong Kong, say, for example, in order to move from, you know, like Kowloon to the mid-levels, you have to behave differently, so that you have to lose all those, again, the Chineseness, and in order to fit into your white neighborhoods in the mid-level and the peak, you know. So again, that's very much to do about, you know, stuff like rising above and keeping up with appearances and things like that.
That's Ray Young, director of the film Front Cover, speaking about the role of class in Asian societies. Interesting that he spoke about that at some length during the interview, I thought.
Yeah, I really start to, you know, my heart goes out to people like Ray, just because they were facing an identity crisis, but on so many different levels. Like sexuality was only part of it, but the other one was being, you know, growing up in Hong Kong, which was predominantly British. So he's Chinese, but he's, you know, in a sort of a British environment. So he's kind of...
Yeah, but you're not a British citizen.
But he's not British, he's not Chinese. Then you throw in the sexuality thing where, you know, in the British side it's kind of okay, but in the Chinese culture it's definitely not okay. And, yeah.
I remember moving just on the cultural differences, or kind of having to be ashamed of where you're from. I'm actually born in South Africa, but I moved to the UK when I was quite young, and I was bullied for being... Well, it's during apartheid, and I'm white. And so I was bullied for being a racist in the UK.
How?
Because I'm a white South African.
So it's axiomatic. You just must be.
Yeah, so I must be. And so I wasn't South African anymore. I wasn't English. Now I'm Australian. So I figured I'd just take a third one on. So I don't have to worry about any of that. But, I mean, yeah, he must feel like that. Yeah, you're stuck at a crossroads of culture. It's also when Hong Kong's changing. It's not just... It's the entire society. It's not just like a small segment of it.
Mm.
I thought it was fascinating when he talked about how they had to save up and move away in case the communists came to get them.
Well, that was kind of their kind of one savior, if you like, was, you know, if we have enough money, we can sort of, we've got an escape route. But if we don't, we're kind of stuck in dealing with all the restrictions and the cultural norms and the not really fitting in anywhere. So, you know, if you've got money, at least you can say, well, if it all goes pear-shaped, I can go out to a different part of the world where things may be a little bit better or a bit different.
Yeah, which I guess is why Hong Kong now has such a reputation for being materialistic. Yeah, you know, it's born out of not just, it's not just 80s money, money, money. It's actually security for your life and how you want to live.
And to differentiate themselves from mainland China.
Yeah.
One of the themes that, you know, we talked about before, but Ray also brought up again, was carrying on that family name. So again, it comes back to that importance of the family being the sort of key element of society. And so, yeah, LGBTI people just, you know, that you can't help it, is that you can't procreate. But it's kind of like, how do you get around that? That's a very big stumbling block, I suppose. You know, you can't sidestep that one.
Where are those grandkids going to come from?
Exactly. Where are those grandkids going to come from?
Or maybe grandkid, although they don't have the one child policy. They've officially rescinded it.
Finally.
Well, although apparently people weren't really following it that closely anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, how did you get around it? I think you could just pay for another child, couldn't you?
You just buy someone else's quota, I'm sure. One of the interesting things that I thought Ray was saying was, you know, you spend so much time pretending to be someone else. So, you know, he felt the cultural pressures to be as non-Chinese as possible, which then kind of made him feel ashamed of that culture. And then at the same time, this dealing with issues that the sexuality, his sexuality and his culture weren't congruent. So he ends up spending a lot of time pretending to be someone else. And I think it's a great message for everyone that, you know, you need to accept yourself first and establish your own identity. You know, I think that's key in, you know, not just in sexuality, but, you know, across the whole range of just being your person, is you've really got to sort of stake a claim on yourself and go, well, this is me. You know, I've got to accept me. If I can't accept me, I can't really move on. I can't go anywhere from here.
It's universal, isn't it? And he mentions that there was only, I think, two Chinese kids at his boarding school. And, you know, it didn't help that he stuck out like a sore thumb. So he had to try really hard to fit in as much as possible and to eradicate the Chinese from his background.
Yeah, and when you're young, that's probably kind of the worst time. That's when you need to be finding out who you are and establishing who you are, as you were saying.
Yeah, so he would have spent, you know, all his formative years really just being a chameleon and going, how do I fit in? How do I fit in not being Chinese? How do I fit in, you know, being British? How do I fit in hiding my sexuality? It's just all a kind of so busy, I guess, maintaining that public farce, that you know, presentation that's going to mean that you're not exposed to, you know, prejudice or violence or, you know, being singled out, that you spend a lot of time actually denying yourself.
Yeah, I think that could be why this film will be so so broad-reaching to so many different people. It's got so many themes that we've all lived through or been through. Yes, we may not all be gay Chinese men, but we're all gonna connect with something in that story about learning to be yourself.
Head to mqff.com.au where you can find out more and grab your ticket.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Sarah, did you hear about Joy's new grid?
Yes, so exciting. We've got new shows. We've got shows at new times.
Except ours, Worldwide Wave, we're staying 7 p.m. Tuesday nights.
Yeah, so you know where to find us.
It was great. I heard Well, Well, Well last night, and they were on, instead of being during the day when I just can never hear them, I got to hear them in the evening. It was fantastic.
And tonight's lineup, still Transpositions at 8, but at 9 we have Sound Museum joining us with Leo, Brian and Stephanie, which provide our weekly guide to the music industry.
And then we have Sci-Fi and Scream with Sonia and Co for the LGBTIQ voice on all things horror, fantasy and sci-fi.
Joined by a new program, Behind the Curtain, with Colin, exploring the origins, history and musical tunes of stage productions. So get onto our website, joy.org.au, and have a look around at the new diverse grid.
Bring joy to the world. Listen to us everywhere. Download the Joy smartphone app. Now at joy.org.au.
Tonight we've been talking to Ray Young, who's the director of Front Cover. And as a filmmaker, we asked Ray what feeling he wanted his audiences to leave the cinema with after seeing his movie.
Well, it's a gay movie about an Asian guy falling in love with an Asian guy. So I would think one of the messages is that people should date Asians because because they are hot. So that's one message. And the other message is like, well, you know, you really have to look into yourself. If there are things that you really dislike about somebody, whether they are very camp or whether they are very, you know, behave in a way that you find, you know, like lower class or whatever, you really should look at that and say, hey, what is there that make myself feel so sensitive about this subject? And maybe there's something that's there that I have. That's why I'm so detested, because I so detest it in myself. I think a lot of the times people who are suppressing being camp, say, I think that's part of the theme of Cut Sleeve Boys as well. It's about, in the gay society, a lot of people sort of like detest camp people, because they just feel that, oh my God, you know, we want straight acting, we want to be butch, we want to be acting. Yeah, because it's trying to fit into the macho world. And at the same time, because they are possibly quite camp inside, so they try to hide it and they really detest someone who's camp. So, you know, if you see someone that you think is really naff or really tacky or really camp, maybe part of you that you are actually quite tacky or quite camp, who knows?
Do you think there is a degree of change going on, a little more acceptance of that? Can you see something changing from maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah, things have changed a lot. I think much, much better now. I think with the globalization, you know, people travel a lot more, and also the culture, you know, opening up a lot more, emails, and people get to know more people from different culture and different backgrounds. I think open up a lot more, definitely. I think it's great, because like a lot of the times, you know, about any kind of prejudice is really just getting to know someone, understand them, and when they become friends, then you no longer carry a lot of that stereotypes that you have of people like that. So I think even though in the majority, well, certainly in a lot of the more developed cities, you know, being gay is no longer an issue. And I think in the gay scene, certainly, I think there are a lot more people who are willing to date Asian people or Asians dating Asians. Although you still see on the Grindr or something like that people actually dare to say no blacks or no Asians, which up to this day, I still think, really? Hold on, you are gay. You should know about these kind of things. Why do you put things like that?
The film is Front Cover. The director is Ray Yung. Thanks for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Thank you so much, Matt.
I think this movie, like I said before, you know, it's going to have so much for so many people. And in that last bit, he's talking about how to break down some of those barriers that discrimination comes from. It's not like if you're in a minority group that you're automatically encompass other minority groups. You can actually generally be quite racist or sexist or whatever else, even if you think that you're a personal victim or that things have gone wrong. So I loved how he said, to rid stereotypes, you're just going to meet people, get to know other people.
Yeah, that old nugget of best way to break through prejudice is, yeah, actually getting to know people. So kind of putting the stereotypes aside. And once you know somebody, then you kind of tend to reevaluate, I guess, where you sit with those things and go, well, hang on, I know someone that fits under this label and, you know, they're a great person. So people re-question that, I think.
I think the biggest story I've ever heard on this was the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan became friends with a black guy.
And what?
It changed him. It took it like about 4 years, but this black guy eventually, when the Grand Wizard quit being Grand Wizard, he gave him the clothes and stuff. So when people tell the black guy, yeah, you shouldn't hang around with these people, he's like, well, what have you ever done? I've stopped a Grand Wizard.
Wow.
Not a real Grand Wizard, not a Harry Potter Grand Wizard.
The less exciting type. evil wizard. Classic. Oh, it could be the Dark Lord.
Classic understatement there, I would say.
I still think that's quite an impressive accomplishment, and it just goes to show the power of personal relationships.
Yeah, so all of us can go out there and make a difference in this world by talking to people.
You are listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Tonight, we would like to thank the wonderful Ray Yung, director of the film Front Cover, showing at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Thanks to all the people that have sent through messages at Stacey, John, Greg, Kisa, Peter, and many more who have joined or interacted on Facebook. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
And tonight, we're finishing up with Love Before Time. and this is by Coco Lee. Of course, some of you may remember this from the soundtrack to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon back in the day. You know, like, what, 15 years ago or something like that?
Oh, yeah, I do recognise it.
Bless. See, what a wonderful movie that was.
The bamboo fields.
Thanks for joining us tonight on the World Wide Wave. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.